Hello, welcome to our first podcast, Wine by the Case. This is where we're going to talk about wine, and we are going to let our guests whine about their legal issues, and we're going to break it down. It's the good, the bad, and the funny. I am Alexis Rosenberg. I am a practicing attorney. I've been practicing for over 20 years in the areas of business litigation, healthcare litigation, as well as now cannabis law.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Sensnick. I go by Chris. I am a UF grad for law school. Been practicing for about 28 years in the employment law arena, so hiring, firing, and everything in between. And I am thrilled to introduce our guest, Heather Holtz-Knudsen.
Yay! And
yes, she is here today to tell us about her business, which is entirely different than law, which is a good thing. It allows everybody to learn something new. One of the things we're going to learn new is we're going to taste a new wine today, ladies.
Yay! I think we should all cheers to that.
I think so, too. This is a wine called 8 Years in the Desert. It is a Zinfandel, and I'm a big fan of big, bold, fruity wine. So don't know about these two, but they're tasting it for the first time.
So tell us the story behind this, because I heard it's legally related with what's going on currently.
It is. And what is fabulous about this wine is most of you know the wine, The Prisoner. It's been around for a long time. It's always been very highly rated. It's a very popular gift wine. And it's one of those things that you can't go wrong when you give it out as a gift. And the person who made it, David Finney, sold it. Sold that particular Zinfandel, The Prisoner, for $340 million.
Nice.
And yeah, that was pretty nice. And with that sale came a non-compete provision, which of course we've all heard about lately with the FTC and the final rule and them allegedly in that it isn't final yet and that it's not till September that it's going to happen and there's litigation going on. But Dave Finney sold his Prisoner Zinfandel. And as a result, he had an 8-year non-compete. That's the name, 8 Years in the Desert, because he could not make any Zinfandel during that time.
Wow, that is cool.
And when he first started issuing the bottles, he issued them as if they were out of his garage. So to this day, you will see a postal tape on the label. So it was a throwback to, I wasn't allowed to, so the only thing I could make was for personal use or to give as gifts. So he would actually make the stuff in his garage. He had a friend who was an artist make labels, and he did use postal tape to wrap them up and pass them out.
Let's be honest, he really didn't have to do anything but sit on a beach.
For $340 million, absolutely. But again, when you love what you do, and of course making wine, who wouldn't love doing that? He would go out and try and figure out who was having the best soil, who was making the best Syrah, and what it was that he was going to do when the 8 years in the desert were over. Now he's got this particular variety, and he's been making it now for about 8 years, and it goes from anywhere from $60 to $130 a bottle, depending on the vintage and depending on the year. But it's always got a cool piece of art made by somebody he knows, and he always has an opening in the art gallery. So it's really a kind of cool wine, and we thought with everyone all excited about the FTC ban that it'd be a good one for us to try. So cheers. Let's see what we think.
Cheers. So we're assuming that Heather likes wine.
I'm here as the winer, right?
Yes.
You are here as the winer. We're hoping you also like wine.
I love wine. This is really interesting. It's nice. I have a question, though. Since I just came back from wine country a little bit.
Oh, nice. Yes.
It takes a while to grow the grapes, like right. Especially red.
Yes.
Like years. Did the non-compete say that he wasn't allowed to grow?
Good question.
Or is he just not allowed to sell?
Interestingly enough, with the non-compete, he wasn't allowed to do anything to move forward with making his Zinfandel. So what he did during that 8 years was he targeted vineyards he wanted to buy, who were making a quality Syrah and Petit Syrah. So as soon as his 8 years were up, he went out and said, how much do you want for that particular?
Well, let's be honest. There's an argument to be made that was moving forward.
But
he didn't buy his own wine.
But he didn't buy it. And he had some really interesting properties that were way off the beaten path that nobody else was really interested in. And frankly, he ended up buying one of those to make his first batch of whiskey.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's interesting.
Interestingly enough, back to what you were talking about with cannabis law, the Vietnam veteran he bought it from was growing cannabis on it.
So he knew the soil was good.
He knew the soil was fabulous. And nobody else knew about it because it was way out past the desert, no joke. So it's really interesting because with a zin, you can end up with really kind of way too much Gallo tasting, but this has got the right, to me, right amount of tannin, a little bit of tobacco, a little bit of chocolate, and depth to it. So it's not a sangria. It's not a fruity sort of one.
Yeah.
It's not quite as minerally as a Pinot. It's thicker. But to me, this one has got a nice full-bodied taste and would be fabulous with just about anything.
I definitely tasted the chocolate that you're talking about. I think that's the thing that kind of struck, and I like it, but it's definitely different.
Yeah, it's that notion of, is it dirt or is it leather, as they like to say.
I just know as we drink, this podcast will get even more interesting. Heather, do you want to tell us about yourself?
Sure. Heather, a.k.a. The Winer. I'm Alice Knudsen. I'm the CEO of H2K Labs. I am a perennial entrepreneur, and H2K Labs is a tech-enabled value creation specialist for media, events, and digital information businesses. And what we do is we help accelerate revenue, improve profitability, and grow enterprise value using their single largest asset, which is data, and data being a very hot topic these days with AI. And we're here in Sarasota locally, but we work with customers all over the world.
That's amazing. This wine producer needed you when he was searching out those different places that he wanted to buy up. That would have been useful at the time.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you serve a lot of wine at your events.
I have to say my background is events, which is why they're one of my clients, and many stories to tell about lots of wine. We used to do wine tastings. We would have round the world receptions where it would be sake and sushi and tequila and tacos, and we had a Sonoma, taste of Sonoma, many tastes of Sonoma.
What was your favorite? What would you say with your data collection? What would you say was the first-hand, most successful event that you did? It wasn't with wine?
The most successful event actually is one of the industries I served when I was an operator. I founded and was the president of a media company. We connected manufacturers, and interestingly enough, wine, to a certain degree, is underneath a manufacturing category because you produce it, you bottle it, and you have a supply chain. And with technology companies who were selling enterprise software and IoT. I would have an event every year called the Manufacturing Leadership Summit, and we would do it in hotels like the Breakers. In fact, the first time I came to Sarasota, we did it at the Sarasota Ritz, which is when I first fell in love with the city back in 2009.
Breakers much nicer.
Again, no offense to the Reds here. The Breakers was definitely, when we moved into the Breakers, we took the event up to another level.
That's next level.
Let me say, every CEO was like to their VP, "You're not going, I'm going, and I'm bringing my wife."
Right.
But it was a really special event in that not only
Heather, we should tell the audience you're talking about the Breakers in Palm Beach, because I think they're going to Google it and there's some not so great.
Yeah, I know.
She's talking about the Breakers in Palm Beach, if you're going to Google it, people.
Yep. The Breakers in Palm Beach. And so we would bring the CEOs, CIOs, COOs of companies all the way from like Ford and General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, down to more middle market companies. And then with kind of on the flip side, the tech companies were SAP, Oracle, Cisco, AT&T. But because of the level of audience, we had Terry Bradshaw come in and speak. We would do these parties that were, like, we had a 60s theme party. We actually brought in one of those old station wagons. I don't know if this is the right word. It was like called a Woody or something. And have it in the center of the lawn with the servers there all dressed up. It was like a drive-in where you would go.
Cool.
So I would do, every night was a different magical theme. And then the final night would be this gala. We would do black tie, which is why I have probably 20 gowns, because I had to have a new gown for every event. And those were really special and my favorite events because it was my baby. And I sold it, actually, to another company, which could bring in the non-compete discussion a little bit. But that was my favorite.
It's time for your wine, if you want to bring it. Your time to wine. We're like therapists. And now you get to
Well, let me just say one thing.
Your therapist doesn't serve wine.
If I have a therapist, wine must be part of the equation. If I get my nails done, there has to be wine. Wine needs to be part of the atmosphere. But I miss doing events so much. I haven't done one in a long time. We're actually launching one for C-level executives in Sarasota at the Art Ovation, and I'm going to have a wine tasting.
Oh, yay!
I'm not surprised.
Yes, I am.
and interestingly, too, as you start your wine, you're talking about all those fabulous events that are fun and memorable. the fact that you had access to those folks is something that you, of course, would want to protect with an agreement, whether it's a confidentiality, non-compete, non-solicit, which of course goes back to the FTC sort of issue. But those are things that, again, sometimes how do you enforce that? Because of course those CEOs are meeting other CEOs, so they already have each other's numbers. But tell us about something that you lived through that you want to whine about.
So actually, I forgot about this issue. So you're right, those relationships were built by me. Mm-hmm. And that business got acquired by, it was a division, so it was a carve out, and was acquired by another company. And I went along because I was very attached to it. I founded it, it was my baby. But those relationships I brought, mm-hmm. okay? That was my LinkedIn, I built it. And LinkedIn is a very interesting part mm-hmm. of non-compete.
It is.
I think I stayed for about 2 years, but it was like the most soul-crushing experience of my life because I'm an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I don't like people telling me what to do. And I was now into this big company, and I'm filling out timesheets, like not my gig, right? So I was like, okay, I need to leave. Like, this is not for me. But I wanted to leave on great terms. There was a real big concern when I left, because I was the face of that event. I was mm-hmm. the face of this community.
By the buyer. Yeah. I have to tell you, we get calls all the time from in that exact situation where these entrepreneurs sell the business, they stay on for as the advisor or consultant, and inevitably, I don't know about Chris, I haven't seen one that's gone all that great because of what you talked about, yeah. Heather, that you're there and now you've become their go-to, their employee right. that's telling you what to do when right. you're the one that knows how everything works.
But all those contacts still think of you. Yeah. You're still the reason that they want to engage with mm-hmm. the new company because they're attached to you, which makes it always problematic right. because I still don't think there's such thing as a merger. I think there's only such thing as an acquisition.
That's 100%. It's second marriages. 70% divorce rate.
But everybody needs a second marriage.
I'm on my second marriage.
So I think all three of us people are on our second. I heard the other day somebody said, somebody's telling a story in a group of women, and they said, oh, that was the first husband. Are they on to the second yet?
We've all done really well with the second.
Yeah, no, I think we're super lucky. Where's that stat? No, I agree with the founder. But they wanted me to sign a non-compete when I left to get severance. Mm-hmm. This was an agreement, right? And I said...
It's interesting.
And I wouldn't call it severance. It right. was a buyout.
If they didn't get it on the front end, they try and get it on the back end.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't sign it. I actually gave up a lot of money because that network was so valuable to me.
Now,
little side story is there also was a LinkedIn group that I had created from my LinkedIn account mm-hmm. that I had years before mm-hmm. this acquisition took place where all of those members were. And they wanted it from me.
Of course they did.
And they called LinkedIn up. I had LinkedIn lawyers calling me. And I was like, it's my group.
Right.
Show me when it was theirs.
Right.
Show me the M&A document
right.
where it says they have the LinkedIn group.
Yeah.
What do you mind saying what the group or you prefer not?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
But I ended up not having, I didn't give it to them. It was my group.
Good for you.
But again, there's the non-compete part. I think it serves certain things really well. Like my family business is Thomas Publishing Company, sold to Xometry in 2021. Certainly when the acquisition happened, Xometry didn't want anyone leaving who was part of the family to go launch a competitor.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So there's a time period, perhaps.
8 years in the desert.
Listen, if you're getting a lot of money, mm-hmm. you're being compensated for
exactly. It's fair.
The non-compete. I think where non-competes are not fair is when it stops someone from making a living.
What, who do does you mean not, like a daycare worker?
Pest control tech?
That's someone who has to pay bills, isn't as fortunate to be selling a business,
right.
who lives... Three kids, whatever.
They're all in the school system. Now they have to move 100 miles away.
You know, yeah. So they should be able to pursue their career where they live.
So I had my son, Ashley, was renting out in golf carts, and we're not going to say the name of the company, and they asked him to sign a non-compete, which I...
Yeah, all that face, you said it all.
That's not happening. You know who I'm talking to. Okay.
No.
Okay. And that's the thing. People don't realize how many times in a day that these things actually come up. So, of course, one of my favorite industries is the hair and spa industry. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, when you find a good hairdresser, you follow them to the ends of the mm-hmm. earth. You don't know if they have a non-compete with a salon.
Right.
You don't. And still there's that issue of, well, if you have a non-compete with a salon, then how is it that me as the customer who wants to choose my service provider is all of a sudden stopped from doing that because they have to move 50 miles. So this whole thing coming up with the FTC is going to be really interesting because a lot of people will get moved out of that category of being appropriate.
So I actually have a story similar-ish to this, and it's with a medical provider that I use. and I have to say this is anti-customer centric, and it actually is a lose. So the person that I went to at this place, and I only went to because of this person, and I had actually wanted to leave a few times, but I stayed because of her because the other stuff wasn't so great. This person ended up going off on this person's own, and this person is not allowed to see me. Mm-hmm. And I happen to have her cell phone. I'm like, what's going on? So I'm not going to her because I don't want her to get in trouble.
Right.
But I'm also not going to them. I'll never go to them.
Right.
Now. And
right.
I'll never recommend
right.
them.
Right.
I will never. They've created a unnecessary, I'm not an advocate. You want customers right. to be advocates.
You do.
So the problem with healthcare is double-fold because it's not just what Chris is mentioning about the non-compete, because there's other laws. Healthcare is heavily regulated. So you have, which I'm not going to bore you with, but it's heavily regulated. And the problem is that you're supposed to be able to pick your doctor. So it's very conflict in the law about that. Mm-hmm. I am a firm believer that they should not make non-competes, even if this isn't upheld against, there should be a carve-out for...
The Florida legislature tried that for 3 years in a row,
for doctors.
To carve out medical because of that fact that people want to be able to choose mm-hmm. who continues to treat them.
What if you have cancer and the doctor, like these are medically, you're mm-hmm. in a medically dangerous situation and you're telling me I have to...
Start over.
Change a doctor and jeopardize my life.
You're absolutely right. Lawyers in Florida, as lawyers, we can't be bound by that. We're exempt. I'm happy about that, but I think that if we're exempt, then definitely doctors should be exempt. But apparently their lobby is not as good as ours.
No shock there. But I also want to talk about something that is a little different than what we do in our legal profession, mm-hmm. because with what Heather does for a living, she gets to deal with something that a lot of you are probably more familiar with, AI. Mm-hmm. And you get to deal with that thing that everyone's all excited about, ChatGPT, and I can't tell you how many times I read things and go, oh no, that person didn't write that. They're using vocabulary this person has never used in their lifetime. Because again, as an employment lawyer, I get to see what people write in the resignation letters, and I get to see the emails, and I'm like, they didn't write that. And again, not that it's not perfect grammar or things like that, but the words being used are simply not normal words for that person.
The flow,
the vocabulary choice, the sentence structure. Again, I jokingly say I write like Faulkner, my husband writes like Hemingway. I like long flowing words and vocabulary, and he likes four words, sentence done.
Yep, that's me.
So I'm like, but again, that notion of looking at all of these different things that this fabulous technology can do, there's also things that are scary about it, particularly in that you are putting out content.
Yeah, break it down for us. Break it down. Give us your expert opinion on this.
So a couple of things. One, operating in the media space, which is all about information. That's their asset, right? Data and the content they're providing. They're paying to create all of this unique content that it helps people make, as I like to say, decisions better, faster, with less risk. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that can apply to both a B2C, business to consumer, and a business to business environment. The issue on the business side is here we are as a business, and media's gotten hosed so many times, it's just ridiculous. The web, Google owns their traffic. Mm-hmm. So this is just yet another punch in the stomach. I personally see it as an opportunity, and I'll tell you why in a second, but their fear is that we're paying to create all of this content. Not only are we losing traffic because people can go now to ChatGPT mm-hmm. and get the answers they need without ever going to our site.
We don't know if they're accurate. There's no guarantee.
Yeah, no, and I'm going to get there in a second. And the way these companies make money is they make money off of eyeballs, right? They're selling advertising. They're selling leads. They also need to convert site visitors to attendees to events. Their traffic's dropping. I saw something 40% last month. It's 60 to 80% now.
I mean, whose traffic were you?
Media website. Okay. It's awful. And it's the last drop was because Google just launched its AI assistant on search. So they're nervous, one, about the loss of traffic to their sites and how that's they're basically could be just wiped out. The second part is they're getting all those eyeballs to ChatGPT and to Google AI. If you go and Google AI says, oh, this came from Forbes. Okay, great, but I'm not clicking to Forbes. What is Forbes getting for that?
Zero.
And maybe not so much zero, and I'll talk about some Reddit. But
do you think that'll change? I mean, these big companies are going to eventually monetize.
So Reddit just went public, I think, and they got, I think one of their $60 million was done from licensing their content to ChatGPT.
So the Reddit's interesting. Maybe you can go into that, because Reddit held out for a long time, because in the early stages, a lot of people monetized, went public, right.
and they
held out.
Anti-establishment.
How many years did they hold out? Almost 20 or 15? But they weren't selling their database. It's my understanding.
So they weren't selling their user database. Those are the people that are using it, and people were renting, would buy lists for their email addresses. Mm-hmm. This is different. This is what's the content that's happening on the site. The reason why Reddit's actually safe with this type of deal is Reddit's content is all user generated. Mm-hmm. Okay, there is a back and forth, there's community, there's likes, there's engagement. Like, you're not going to get any of that in ChatGPT. ChatGPT is giving you an answer to a question. It's helping you write a blog better.
It doesn't do this or this.
Right. It doesn't let you connect with people.
But it's my understanding, and I may be wrong because this is not my space, that now with them going public, they're actually selling it to companies like
yes.
Google,
$60 million monetizing
all of that database of information of people going back and forth.
Not the people, the content.
The content.
Because that's what's feeding the large language learning model. Axel Springer out of Germany, which owns some U.S. properties, also made a deal, smaller, $5 million, and Financial Times just did one. I can't remember the amount. So there is a revenue model here, for sure. And FYI, it's a lot of content that's old, right? People are looking at new content. So these media publishers are sitting on assets that are being unmonetized. Now they can monetize it. I think it's a huge win on that score. And they're getting paid fairly for the licensing, keyword here, not giving it away, it's not, they still own it, licensing, right. So that it's feeding large language models. The problem is that they bought, I think it's up to 2 years, the ChatGPT. So they bought all of this stuff from years ago to feed the model. Now they only have 2 years left. So the opportunity is for these media companies to up their game with content creation. Start doing more Reddit-like things where you're getting user-generated content that's really original. It's not the same writers over and over. There's engagement back and forth, questions being answered. You're still going to keep your audience because you're never going to get that engagement on a ChatGPT channel, at least for now. And I think there's their own opportunity to have their own AI capability within their own business, which is a monetizable thing, which is outside the scope of this.
But a very good point.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Yeah. The issue is for the other part of the fear is what their employees are doing.
Right.
Okay.
With putting things into ChatGPT to help write an article. Right. Or another way, it's not maybe not help write the article, it's they've written the article and they're like, hey, yeah, editors are charged with coming up with meta titles, meta tags, keywords. Oh, let me put that up into ChatGPT. I will get a LinkedIn post. I'll get a Facebook post. I'll get my little short Twitter post.
Instagram.
I'm going to get all my hashtags. I'm going to get all of my I can see the keywords. I get everything. My meta description. All of this stuff that I hate doing. Like, it's not. Boom, up. Now, ChatGPT, without getting paid, has the article, has all of this IP. It saved the company tons of money in a way, because now the editor can write more content, hopefully, because they're not doing all that other stuff. But so that's one fear. And then the other fear is there's a lot of coding being looked at through ChatGPT. And so now, and my husband is doing this, but they're getting a lot of code off of ChatGPT for certain things. I wouldn't call it complex.
But still, they didn't pay for it, and they're just mining the metadata.
So, one, they're getting the code, so they're not paying for them. And they're also uploading theirs, i.e. to check things out or whatever. So I think it's very early days. I think there's going to be a lot of legislation about it. I also think there's going to be a whole slew of startups coming up to start.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Especially when my joke is, you can't use Taylor Swift's tooth in a photo.
Yeah.
Or an eyelash. It's hers. So she needs to be paid for it.
But we still go back to, you talked about regulating and legislating. Yeah. Since the majority of people in Congress are well over the age of 50. Mm. Well over the age of 50. You're talking about people who mostly have their assistants and their clerks do this stuff for them. So when you go in and say, we need to regulate this, they look at you and go, what are we talking about here? So I think that there's an educational process, too,
oh, yeah,
that's going to go along with this, as well as that notion of where it is that someone goes, wait a minute, those are my three sentences. I put that into a poem that I put out, and that's my haiku.
I think it's going to take a big guy.
I think so, too.
It's going to take the big people. But you bring up about the age of Congress. It's like the Florida Bar Technology Committee. Everybody on it is over 50. I said to them, maybe we want to get some people that are a little younger, because yeah, I think the people on this committee want to learn about technology.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be the ones setting the regulatory provisions about the technology.
I mean, again, I've heard about ChatGPT. I've never used it. I wouldn't know how to access it. I still have a problem with Google Earth.
I actually did use it because I tried to do the logo for this podcast, and apparently it thought that you and I should have very large
assets.
Very low. And I was like,
and don't forget the Farrah Fawcett hair.
You remember I sent it to you, and you're like, I don't know about these. I said, I'm not agreeing with them, but this is what ChatGPT logo should be.
Right.
Next time I will put one up for you guys.
I think the design is terrible.
I just think it's really interesting that with all this technology, so much of it is being created by people who aren't necessarily getting the credit for it.
Yep.
Again, I know if you're working for Google, you're working for some of these companies, mm-hmm, you're being paid for that contribution. But like you said, you load it up and somebody else's code, somebody else's idea is necessarily being distributed. I think that's different from a Linux kind of platform where people were contributing. See, I do know something. Willingly, knowing that it was meant to be modified, as compared to you took it, and I never said you could take it.
But don't you think it's going to be similar, just like with the music industry, when in the beginning,
Napster.
With Napster, what was that, in the late 90s, and everybody initially when they heard it, oh, it shouldn't be regulated, music should be free. So I think this is going to be a similar thing. It's going to evolve out of necessity. And then there's going to be regulations on it.
Yeah, so I agree. It's just more complicated. Because with Napster, it was the song.
It was
very easy to identify that Napster had my stuff and was giving it away for free and I wasn't getting paid. It's modified, which is where I think that startup ecosystem is going to really grow. Mm-hmm. It's what we're talking about with schools that are able to identify stuff.
Plagiarism.
Mm-hmm.
But then it would be similar to copyright violations when one musician takes notes from a song, and then is that a copyright violation, or is that song different enough that it doesn't violate?
Yes.
I think we're going to get into that, and that's going to be the case law that ultimately they're going to utilize initially.
And then, of course, there's the notion of licensing compared to just stealing, but saying, I want a piece of that. So how do I get it?
And I think my head's where it's going to, is imagery. You're right on the copy.
What do you mean by imagery? Expand on that.
Photos.
Right.
Art.
Oh, because the
where
AI.
Where I'm taking things of a person's likeness and changing it, right? Or taking photography that I should have paid for, but taking a part of it to create a new thing in Canva, let's say.
Yep.
I'm doing that illegally. Like, I'm taking it, and especially in the celebrity realm, where Taylor Swift is a great example, and I'm not kidding about the using Taylor Swift's smile on a photo. Nothing else is there but her smile. If there's a technology to be like, hey, that's Taylor Swift's smile, you owe her X because that photo was distributed around.
And at $1 billion,
that's her
image.
Ability
to sue you.
That's scary on another level, because then you just brought up about doing that. People who don't have the best intentions, forget about utilizing it on their own, but if you have somebody's image or you can replicate their voice, there's a lot of criminals out there that could use that for
Scarlett Johansson's really been very upset about she being used for AI? Because the AI sounds exactly like her. And they're like, oh, it wasn't. I'm like, but it sounds exactly like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all these things are really interesting from a, how do we necessarily, as you said, how do we address it? How do we govern it?
It's here, and it's been here, by the way, for a very long time.
How long has it been here? Because for the general public, like myself, mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's only been around a couple years.
No. So, for example, the voice thing, mm-hmm. for sure, and in illegal ways, or not with good intent ways, has been used with those scams, the grandmother scams.
Yes.
Where they try to make it sound like the kid's voice. So it's been here on the art side. You could go into Canva, and again, that's been around recently, but you could doctor up images mm-hmm. not as easily as you can now. What's changed is there's a website open to the public.
Right. Mm.
I don't need to code. I don't need to know how to do anything.
It's accessibility.
It's user-friendly,
yes.
And it's free to start, where I can go in yeah. and do all this stuff.
And take an image that they've said is royalty-free.
Yeah.
It's a stock photo sort of thing.
Yeah.
But most people are wanting the photo of Taylor, or yeah. to be very artsy, a Helmut Lang, that sort of thing where you go, no, I want that kind of image. So I'll just take a piece of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you wanting to us.
Yes. Thank you. I hope I wined enough.
You did. Well, you still have a full glass or yeah. half glass of wine. So I don't know if you wine enough, but what do you have coming up? Tell us
yeah,
how.
You mentioned about you've yeah. got something coming on in November. So tell us more about that.
I have two things coming up, and both actually will address AI. One is in New York on June 18th at the Yale Club. I'm hosting, right. It's called Lunch.
You have great venues.
She does. Again, that's a draw. Again, she's got another right people to call to be able to get
Hey, listen,
venues.
When you host events for event organizers, you better have a good
venue. You better bring
yes.
your own game.
Exactly. There's no A-. It is called Lunch Lab, and it is on the 18th of June from 12 to 4, and it is a rapid learning experience for CEOs and their C-suite revenue teams, and it's all about customer centricity in complex business models. So that's my first event. The second one will be November 13th and 14th here in Sarasota at the Art Ovation. It's called Revved Up. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about it, but it's, again, for CEOs and their revenue critical C-suite teams, and it's all about accelerating revenue, the Revved Up. We're going to do a Monte Carlo theme.
We got to go to that.
Yeah. You guys get to go and give advice.
And if somebody wants to learn more about how to attend one of those events, how do they get a hold of you?
Two ways. One is Heather at H2KLabs.com. Or you can go to our website, H2KLabs.com.
And we're going to put that below mm-hmm. so you have it.
Perfect.
Yeah, because that sounds like a fabulous event. And remember, she said wine tasting.
Mm-hmm. Wine everywhere. It's always wine.
Probably some whiskey, too, for our non-drinkers.
Oh, I actually have some adaptogen, non-alcoholic CBD drinks. So. Yeah.
That'd be great. So, this has been fun. It's our first.
It has.
It's Wine by the Case. So, we've had a lot of whining. We've learned about AI. Thank you so much, Heather, because that's all new to me. It really is.
Yeah.
It's
Thank
fascinating.
You for coming and being our first guest. This
yes.
has been a train wreck. So, you really are a brave woman.
You guys are awesome. It feels like you guys have been doing this forever.
Well, what's really nice is an opportunity to be able to tell people about something that they may know a little about. Because, again, let's talk the FTC thing. Everybody's heard about the non-compete ban, and everyone thinks it's in place right now. It is not. And we're waiting for what the court's going to do, and they promised a ruling by July 3rd, and that may be a national ruling, or it could be a Texas-only ruling. Because back when the DOL tried to increase the salary thresholds the first time, that was a national ruling by the Texas courts. But the Planned Parenthood ruling was a Texas-only. So we've got the two. So we don't know which way they're going to go. We really don't. But Texas tends to be a very anti-large government state. Again, the motto, don't mess with Texas. They pick their court well, but we've got all that to come up. So that's going to be interesting to watch. Watching what happens with AI and learning more about how we can necessarily try and govern it a little bit. We certainly are looking forward to your conference on that. And the issues of where it is that people can protect themselves. This is all really mm-hmm. interesting stuff.
And now I think we should go drink the rest of our glass
I think
of
so
wine
too. So
and say
cheers.
Cheers. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming.
Yes.
This is great.